I've been puzzling over these readings all week. They look like a dog's breakfast of stuff. The second and third readings sort of fit together because we're coming to the end of the liturgical year. Next week is Feast of Christ the King. Advent begins a week after that, and so we've seen all the readings during the Sunday and during the week, the readings about the end times. And of course, this reading from Thessalonians is Paul's response to those people who were worried because God had not sent Jesus back to judge the world, because if God raised Jesus from the dead, the end was imminent, and it didn't happen. So Paul had to write to the Thessalonians and say, just don't worry about it. You know, don't worry about it. The end is coming, and soon. But don't worry about it. And of course, the passage from Matthew is also about an end time, a final reconciliation and stuff. But then in the midst of this, you have this passage from Proverbs. Now, what do you do with that? If you read the wisdom literature of which Proverbs is a part, they talk a lot about women, but always in a threatening way, because women were constantly seen as temptresses, seductresses, wily. And the point of much of the wisdom literature was to prepare young men to be in charge of things. And the big danger to their effect of being in charge was, of course, the seduction by women. So when he says, who's going to find a capable wife, it's almost a rhetorical question expecting the answer, nobody. But he says, well, it's possible. It's possible. You're going to get a woman who will do something that will do honor to her husband. Please note the way it's worded here. She'll be a good wife if she justifies the life and the career of her husband. Everything is for him. So where does all this fit together? And then I had a happy thought, and I think it's a good one. If we're talking about the end time, what's at stake here? I mean, we're beyond the white clouds and long white dresses and harps and Peter standing at the gate with a long beard letting people in and out. I mean, we've surely moved beyond that in our imagination. What is the end time? Well, we take a cue from Paul. The end time is the achievement of God's original intention in creating us human beings, which we find in the very first chapters of the book of Genesis. What's to happen there? We human beings are supposed to be able to stand equally with each other, naked and unashamed. Radical justice, in other words, radical equality. And then I remembered a set of statistics, and I'm sorry if you'll be patient. I just want to read these things because I think they're very illuminating. This is not the full list, but this is some of the more pertinent ones. 70% of the 1.3 billion people living in poverty around the world are women. 70%. Women do about 66% of the world's work in return for less than 5% of its income. Women log 2/3 of the world's working hours and produce half the world's food, yet earn only 10% of the world's income and own less than 1% of the world's property. 90% of casualties of armed conflict since 1945 have been civilians, 3/4 of which are women and children. And today there are over 35 major conflicts going on in the world. 60 million people are displaced by conflict and disaster worldwide, 75% of whom are women and children who often face hardship like sexual abuse and violence. 1 in 4 women worldwide will experience rape or sexual violence in her lifetime. Like 25 to 75% of women are beaten regularly at home, depending on the country. And of course, Hillary Clinton rejoiced that there were 18 million cracks in the glass ceiling. in the land of the free, in the home of the brave, that here in Canada, women still are markedly underpaid for doing the same work as men do. So what does all this have to do with the end time? The end time means that all these inequalities are somehow going to be righted. That these massive disparities based on gender will be overcome. That justice will be done. That God's justice will be done, will be realized among us human beings. We who know so little of it, seems to me, based on gender primarily, based on race, color, ethnicity, sexual orientation. All these massive divisions between us. This is what Jesus is going to somehow rectify. This is the end time. This is what we're supposed to be expecting. So in a way, I don't know whether the people who chose these readings intended that kind of playing off of the reading, but it is quite interesting. And as everybody knows, the statistics could be multiplied more than one. These are just a few. In the church, the person in charge of all religious women, nuns, is, of course, a man. And although the Vatican makes all kinds of noises about the equality between men and women or their complementarity, I mean, power is still anything but equitably distributed between men and women among us in the church. So we need to think, especially we men, I think, need to take full consideration of all of these dismal facts in order to make the meaning of the end time real, to give it substance, to make sense of it. Because that's what it is. It's not flowers and organ music and little putty little angels with their bare bottoms floating around on little tiny wings coming out of their shoulders, their harps and long dresses and all that stuff. It's justice. It's God's justice. It's the reestablishment of that primal equality between us human beings that the book of Genesis talks about, that Jesus was all about. So, when we think about Christ the King and the end of the liturgical year, and the end of the entire human enterprise, we need to be very clear as to what we're thinking about.